Stay tuned for one of the most fascinating programs you'll ever hear as we explore the strange and mysterious world of the paranormal and UFOs. Welcome to the Paranet Continuum, a weekly program dealing with extraordinary claims of the paranormal on Earth and beyond. Whether or not you believe in the paranormal, the controversies are real, and this program will try to get to the bottom of it. Your host is Michael Corbin, Director of Paranet Information Services, a global communications network based near Denver, Colorado, dedicated to the investigation of parapsychology, futuristic science, and the UFO enigma. We invite you to keep an open mind as we discuss some of the most fascinating and strange subjects around. Now here's your host, Michael Corbin.
And welcome to the program tonight. Tonight we're going to be talking about sightings. Now last week we had the people from Sightings, the program in the studio, and we talked about that program. Tonight we're going to talk about actual sightings, and my guest is going to be Peter Davenport, who is the director of the National UFO Reporting Center in Seattle, Washington. And the material that Peter has sent us is quite fascinating. One of the things I want to do during this hour is I want to make a point, and the point I'm going to make is that the literature today that we get in the form of books and that type of stuff, it's more along the lines of what I call folklore. I was going through my library the other day, and I found some, you know, I've got quite a considerable collection of older books, UFO books, and some of the great authors like Donald Kehoe and Captain Edward Ruppelt from Project Blue Book and others, and Jacques Vallée particularly, too. The thing I'm finding is that the new literature does not deal with sightings in the way that they used to several years ago. For example, something I want to read to you tonight at the beginning of the hour here. This was found in Frank Edwards' book, Flying Saucers Here and Now, from 1950. This memo is from a joint Army-Navy briefing delivered in Washington, D.C. in the summer of 1950, and it was reported by Frank Edwards in his book, Flying Saucers Here and Now. Now, the reason I'm reading this is because this kind of gives you an example of the mind of the military and the government back in the early formative years of modern ufology. You know, we have many discussions about this kind of stuff, and we come up with this thing about, you know, well, what do we know about what the government knows? And I've been saying all along that there's been definitely a program of disinformation, and you know, we're seeing a lot of that take the stage today. And I want to bring everybody back to this because I think it's very important. This is called, again, the seven phases to contact. Now, phase one would be the approach. This would take place before we knew whether the planet was inhabited. It would consist of a cautious and careful surveillance from a distance considered safe. If the planet had any satellites which we could use, we would carefully investigate them as possible sites for close-in bases from which to study the planet for the likelihood of intelligent life. Now, again, this is the mind of the military, the joint Navy and Army mindset here in the 50s. This is they're looking into the mind of an alien civilization that might be coming here. Now, phase two would conceivably consist of close-range surveillance of the planet by instrumented probes. These probes would take photographs, gather samples of the atmosphere, and locate the nature and extent of the centers of civilization, if any. Phase three, if the results obtained by the instrumented probes seem to warrant further investigation, that type of craft would be phased out and replaced by faster and more maneuverable manned craft. The purpose of this change would be to check the performance characteristics of vehicles belonging to the planetary inhabitants, to test their speed, types of propulsion, and maneuverability as compared to their own, as compared to our own. Phase four, the really risky phase of the trip is this phase, where manned craft make near approaches to determine whether the alien beings are hostile, and if so, to what extent and by what means. Also, to check radar locations and locations of military centers, if any. Phase 5. Brief touchdowns in isolated areas to secure specimens of plants, animals, and, if possible, specimens of the intelligent beings themselves. Now, as you remember, the early 50s, late 40s, early 50s, it wasn't actually until the 70s that abductions were even treated seriously by investigators and researchers. Here we're having this phase talked about or even considered by the military in the 1950s. Phase 6. If we have been successful in acquiring the information we needed by the preceding steps, we must now decide on the basis of that knowledge whether to abandon the project as too risky or otherwise undesirable, or whether to put into effect the sixth phase of the program. If we decide that the evidence seems to warrant some kind of eventual contact, direct or indirect, then phase 6 would consist of landings and low-level approaches where our craft and their operators could be seen, but not reached. These approaches would be made where they could be witnessed by the greatest possible number of inhabitants. If carried out successfully, this phase would demonstrate our existence and our non-hostile nature. Phase 7, referred to by our briefing officers as the, quote, overt contact phase, this would be the deliberate, carefully planned, and executed final step in the program. Contact would not be attempted unless we had excellent reason to believe that it would not be disastrous to either of the races involved. There are some good reasons why it might never come to pass, even though results of the first six phases might have indicated that it could be physically possible. That's the end of that. And again, that's from the Joint Army-Navy briefing delivered in Washington, D.C. in the summer of 1950. And I think probably one of the things I want to do over the next course of the next couple of weeks and then months is I want to start gradually introducing some of the older stuff. And I want to demonstrate the contrast between some of the older stuff and some of the stuff that we hear about today. Okay, now let's move on to our guest. Our guest, again, is the director of the National UFO Reporting Center. It's located in Seattle, Washington. Now, this center has been around since 1974. It was founded by Robert Gribble. And apparently, this center receives many UFO reports from law enforcement officers, federal aviation authorities, and the like. And these reports are of a high quality. It's my pleasure to welcome to you the director, Peter Davenport. Good evening, Peter.
Good evening, Michael, and thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was a very nice introduction.
Well, thank you, and thank you for being on the program. Now, we've got a couple minutes before we go to our first break. Real quick, give me a little thumbnail sketch of the founding of the center by Bob Gribble.
Yes.
And bring us up to speed on what you're doing today.
Yes. The UFO Reporting Center in Seattle was founded, I believe, as a consequence of a flap of UFO sightings that occurred all across the United States and, in point of fact, around the world in the fall of 1973. Many of our listeners may remember that flap. That's when two fishermen were picked up in Pascagoula, and there were hundreds and hundreds of other incidents all across the United States. Bob Gribble, who resides in Seattle, he's a retired Seattle fireman, decided that it was time to set up a national reporting center for these incidents such that they could be reported on an almost real-time basis. He set it up, he ran it with a very small group of volunteers, dedicated volunteers, for 20 years. And in that time, I estimate they took probably somewhere between 200,000 and 250,000 calls, a quarter of a million calls.
Wow.
In 20 years. It was very busy. Some of the reports he took were just astonishing. And we're going to be talking about some that we've taken just over the last 13 months since I became director. Some of them are enough to turn your hair white, but they are certainly enough to remove any doubt whatsoever in the mind of a fair-minded person as to whether this phenomenon is taking place or not.
Okay, and as Peter said, we're going to go to break now, but as Peter said, these reports will surprise you from the sources that these have come in. And again, these are solid reports. These are not, as I mentioned earlier, these are not folklore or any folk tales. These are actual sighting reports that are going on all over the country, and it'll amaze you at the number of them. Okay, when we come back, we're going to talk to Peter Davenport, and we got a T-shirt giveaway, so stand by. I'm Michael Corbin, and you're listening to the Paranet Continuum program. We'll be right back.
On the next edition of Sightings. For Ranel and Terry Wallace, a second honeymoon became a hellish nightmare.
When I got sucked out onto the wingtip, my whole body was completely on fire.
Theirs is a miraculous story of near death and rebirth. Then, why is the government quietly buying land around its most secret military base?
Everyone's heard of Area 51 now because they took this public action.
An unsettling phenomenon is disrupting life on an old Nebraska farm.
Every time we seem to put an animal in there, they die.
There's something in the air over the Holy Land, and investigators feel it's not of this world.
The soil appeared to be melting, and there is no explanation. This does not occur in nature.
And scientific evidence that could prove werewolves are real. Check local time and listings for sightings in your area.
It's been said that the pen is mightier than the sword. With Paranet, the computer and modem is mightier than the pen. Paranet is the world's foremost electronic authority on UFOs and the paranormal. Paranet gives you rapid access to UFO researchers and others like you who want to know what's going on. You'll find stimulating discussions with an interactive link to the world through the Internet's information superhighway. There's a variety of departments dealing with paranormal activities, parapsychology, alien abduction research, conspiracy theories and government cover-ups, and cutting-edge science. There's even a skeptics conference. Paranet also has the world's most comprehensive database of news articles, sighting reports, and much more available for a small fee. So plug into power and knowledge with Paranet. Call the data line at 303-863-0469. That's 303-863-0469. Or for more information, contact Paranet at 303-863-0484. This is the Paranet Continuum, where we answer questions and question answers. And we want to know what you think. Call us and stay tuned. Now back to your host, the Director of Paranet Information Services, Michael Corbin.
And as Blake said, we're questioning answers tonight, and we're answering questions on the Paranet Continuum. My guest is Peter Davenport, Director of the National UFO Reporting Center in Seattle, Washington. If you want to give us a call, our number is 1-800-836-2009. That's 1-800-UFO-2009. That's a toll-free number. Give us a call. Peter, before we go into the actual sightings, tell me what the purpose of your group is.
Yes. We wear many hats at the UFO Reporting Center in Seattle, it turns out, anywhere from counselor to communicator to public relations and so on. But I would say there are two principal missions that we have. The first and the most important is to receive reports of UFO sightings or mysterious events from all over the country. And point of fact, we have taken a number of calls internationally, South Africa, South America, and around the globe, really.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the first thing. And the principal source of our information is the UFO hotline here in Seattle, 722-3000, which has been here, again, for 21 years. The second thing we do is try to get that information out to the American public, and I think this is where we are to be distinguished from many other UFO research or reporting groups, in that we turn our information around, we make it available over the Internet. Now we have a newsletter. We're very soon going to have a 1-900 fax service, whereby anybody with a fax machine who would like to know what the last week's sightings have been can simply dial up and for a dollar or two perhaps get a fairly detailed report of what has happened across the United States.
Now, this sounds like a very interesting center. And, of course, as I've mentioned, the material that you sent us is very comprehensive, very interesting. Where do you get your funding to do something like this?
Yes, I'm delighted you asked that question, Michael, because for the last 20 years, actually now 21 years, the center has been funded exclusively almost by the center's director. My predecessor, Bob Gribble, for 20 years paid all of the phone bills, mm-hmm. all of the correspondence, and so on. I estimate he must have invested $50,000 in this, at least in the course of 20 years. I have supported it with assistance, donations, subscriptions to our monthly newsletter, and so on and so forth, sort of hand-to-mouth over the last 13 months. I think we're going to change that in the near future. But it comes principally either from me or from generous contributors in MUFON. I'm also a member of the Mutual UFO Network here in the state of Washington, mm-hmm. and director of investigations. I have a very good relationship with MUFON, with many of the state directors across the country, and also subscriptions to our newsletter and things like that.
Okay, now, Peter, do you guys check out the reports? And if you do, how far do you go with the investigation?
Yeah. I wish we had greater resource to be able to follow up and do in-depth, detailed investigation. But we are not, as things stand right now, Michael, we are not an investigating body.
Okay, so you just basically collect the information, turn it around, and distribute it to the public.
Exactly. We are a clearinghouse for UFO information. We provide the American public with a place to call if they think they've seen a UFO. And the way people find us, well, for one thing, through programs like this, people learn of our center for the first time through radio and TV. But in addition to that, over the last 20 years, my predecessor, Bob Gribble, sent out probably 50,000 letters to sheriff's offices, to military facilities, to major metropolitan police departments. All of the FAA facilities know about us and commonly direct calls to us. More often than not, and some of our listeners, I hope, will be able to listen to some of the calls that have come in from the FAA and others. More often than not, the FAA will call us themselves, say that they've taken a report, or they will give us a report of their own.
Mm-hmm.
There have been several instances over the last 6 or 7 months in which FAA air traffic controllers have seen objects for which they have no explanation whatsoever.
And I think you'll agree, too, Peter, that when you talk about reporting and you talk about things that come in on the report, the data that comes in off of the sighting reports,
yes,
anything that comes in from a pilot or someone of that caliber is a report that deserves a lot more attention because of the quality of the observation.
Absolutely.
Sure.
One of the things I'm going to be playing later is a report we took on the 11th of September, Monday afternoon, from Salt Lake City. I know we have some listeners in Salt Lake City. One of the off-duty air traffic controllers called us. He and a group of airline or aviation people were at a living residence in South Salt Lake City. They looked to the west in the setting sun, and they saw a string of very peculiar-looking objects, very bright. Even though the observers were looking into the setting sun, they said they could see these things very clearly. They appeared to be radiating so brightly. It was quite a remarkable sighting. I'll be playing that one perhaps a little later if we have time.
Okay. Now, go on to some of the sighting reports, the more remarkable ones that you've got or that you've received over the course of the months at the National Reporting Center.
Yeah, they have been, many of them have been astonishing. Of course, we take the whole gamut of calls, Michael. We take a lot of twinkling star calls at night, regrettably.
Mm-hmm.
many Americans are going outside to look at the night sky for the first time. They see a twinkling star, which is really an unfortunate term because they're vivid, vivid chromatic displays depending on atmospheric conditions.
How low they are in the horizon, too.
That's exactly the case. They're all over the sky. But I think there have been really a handful of astonishing calls. The one that really comes to mind is a call we took on the 7th of January, Saturday night this year, from the Tennessee Emergency Management Agency.
Okay.
Every state has an emergency management facility or agency, much like FEMA, although they are state-based, they're state agencies. It appears, and we have very solid evidence that supports virtually every aspect of this report, it appears to us that a UFO may have blown up over McMinnville, Tennessee, again on the 7th of January this year. We took a call at about 9:30 that night, Seattle time. TEMA called us. They apparently had been apprised of this incident over McMinnville, maybe even activated, if that's a correct term. And they called the Air Force Recovery Coordination Center at Langley Air Force Base in Langley, Virginia, and asked what to do about a UFO report. And the Air Force there in Langley told them, well, call the UFO Center in Seattle. They called us to report that a fleet, a cluster of ships, had been reported by many parties, many of them known to be quite reliable, by the Warren, Tennessee County Sheriff's Office.
Wow.
They had seen a cluster of solid objects with bizarre lights all over them, descending very slowly out of the sky to the earth. When they got close to or on the earth, the surface of the earth, there was an immense explosion that blew huge fragments of blue burning material high into the sky, perhaps thousands of feet into the sky.
Good heavens, and this was something that was witnessed by all these people?
This must have been witnessed by hundreds, maybe thousands of people in McMinnville, Tennessee.
That's incredible.
It is incredible. We know that the manager of the McMinnville, Tennessee airport saw the explosion from his home. He immediately went to the airport, jumped in an aircraft, took off in the direction of where he had seen the explosion occur and the burning fragments, and he searched the area for a half an hour. He found nothing. We also know that within a matter of hours, and this is a rather tall statement that I'm about to make, and I would not make it if I didn't have good evidence as to its veracity, within a matter of 2 hours or perhaps even less, federal agents were in the city of McMinnville. They were in the county of Warren County in Tennessee. We know that they implored the Warren County Sheriff's Office to say nothing about this incident. We have very solid evidence that these people who were identifying themselves as federal agents were going on to people's property, apparently looking for something.
Debris.
Don't know what yet.
Okay. All right, hold it right there, Peter.
Yes, sir.
Got to go to break. Wow, that's an incredible story coming out of Tennessee, McMinnville, Tennessee. That's wild. Listen, give us a call. If you have a sighting to make, this is the man to give it to, Peter Davenport, director of the National UFO Reporting Center. You can reach him right now on the air, 1-800-836-2009, 1-800-UFO-2009. We'll pick up on the other side for this discussion about Tennessee. I'm Michael Corbin, and you're listening to the Paranet Continuum. Alien Grays makes t-shirts and sweatshirts for the UFO enthusiast, and they're some of the best artwork you've ever seen on a t-shirt. Alien Grays has over 15 designs, including the well-known gray alien head with almond-shaped black eyes, X-Files and Star Trek shirts, Fire in the Sky, and other dazzling alien life forms and space art. All t-shirts are blazing, full-colored, laser-printed onto 100% pre-shrunk white cotton tees. Now, people will notice these shirts when you wear them. To order a catalog or order a shirt, call this toll-free number during the week. It's 1-800-561-7775. That's 1-800-561-7775. Now, as we've done before, I'm going to give away a free t-shirt from Alien Grays to the seventh caller right now who calls 1-800-UFO-2009. That's 1-800-836-2009. That's the seventh caller. And for those of you listening to this program late at night or early in the morning on tape delay, send us a postcard with your name and address, and we'll draw one postcard per week. You write that to Paranet T-Shirt Giveaway, Post Office Box 172, Wheat Ridge, Colorado, 80034.
It takes a straight-ahead, no-nonsense look at UFOs, worldwide sighting reports, parapsychology, abduction phenomena, futuristic science, and much, much more. You can get Continuum for just $18 a year. Continuum is also available by fax for a small additional fee. Be informed. Call now and subscribe to Continuum. Call 1-800-UFO-NET-1. That's 1-800-836-6381. Continuum, published by Paranet Information Services and MICAP. Order yours today at 1-800-UFO-NET-1. Continuum, one of the most fascinating magazines you'll ever read. UFOs for real, or are they just fiction, or imagination, or disinformation? To find out, stay tuned for more of the Paranet Continuum with your host, Michael Corbin.
And once again, my guest tonight is Peter Davenport, director of the UFO, I keep saying UFO, it's the National UFO Reporting Center in Seattle, Washington. Welcome back, Peter.
Thank you, Michael.
That's an incredible story you're telling us about McMinnville, Tennessee. Now, where is McMinnville?
McMinnville is about 60 miles southeast of Nashville, I believe. It's right in the heart of Tennessee. In fact, we took, just Tuesday of this last week, we took a hair-raising and spine-tingling report from Mountain City, Tennessee, which is in the easternmost end of Tennessee. I think it's Johnson County.
Okay.
12 objects reported by seemingly reliable parties that were hovering. There were several different types, triangles, a disc or one or more discs, and they were shooting bolts of orange light at one another.
Wow.
We got a similar report from Georgia Wednesday night of just this past week. We're talking 4 and 5 days ago. One thing I'd like to add to that McMinnville report, Michael, you know, despite the dramatic nature of it, and I mean our evidence is good, we have an 8-page fax from TEMA detailing what happened that we send out in our general information package when people write asking for information. But not a word, not one word that we're aware of was printed in the local newspapers or covered on the television.
You know, I was going to get to that here, you know, next, because something so incredible where you have something explode in the air like that and provide such a brilliant, dazzling light display. It totally amazes me, Peter, that we do not hear anything about this. You know, the general trend for most people that I talk to is that they think sighting reports are on the downside.
Yeah.
But according to what I've seen here with you folks, that's quite the contrary.
I would like to be able to take anybody who thinks that UFO reports are on the downswing and put them on the hotline on one busy night. We would change their opinion very quickly.
Okay.
There's no doubt about it.
Now, I also understand you've got some audio clips for us tonight.
Yes.
Why don't we go into that, and we'll do that so that we can hear some of the quality that we're talking about here. Go ahead and set up the first one.
Let me play one short clip. It's only about 44 seconds long.
Okay.
Many people ask, well, why don't pilots see UFOs? Or why don't members of the FAA community see UFOs? I'm going to play a short clip here.
All right.
And it will be good evidence as to the type of thing we're getting from the FAA.
Now tell us, when was this taken?
This was taken on the 31st of January
this
year. It's a Houston-based FAA air traffic controller reporting what he had reported to him from not one, but two airliners. Here we go.
Okay.
On Monday, 31 January, 95, I'm talking with Martin, the FAA in Houston. What do you have?
Hang on a second.
Yeah.
I've got two airliners northwest of Alexandria, Louisiana, approximately 60 miles at 31,000 feet on both of them, southwestbound, and they're reporting some unknown object flying above them with lights that are two objects that are together, and they split apart, and then they go back together.
Oh, really? What time did they report that?
About 5 minutes ago.
So, I hope some of our listeners tonight realize and recognize that this phenomenon is not just imaginal. It is real. We are taking UFO reports every day. On a busy day, we're taking somewhere between 3 and 4 dozen calls. Perhaps a third or a half of those are legitimate UFO reports.
That is incredible. Now, as the pilots reported, these objects were merging or joining and separating.
Apparently, they were maneuvering. The two airliners were at 31,000 feet, I think you heard that controller say.
Mm-hmm.
The objects were above them. Now, anybody who has any flying experience, who's flown at high altitudes, knows that you don't move an aircraft very suddenly at 31,000 feet. The air is pretty thin up there.
Right.
So you can't jerk an aircraft around. You have to turn it and allow it to turn relatively slowly. So these objects were being reported as splitting in two and moving around very suddenly. You know, it reminds me of a report we took from Flint, Michigan, from 5 air traffic controllers. It was I happen to remember the date on this one. It was Friday, the 17th of March this year. 5 air traffic controllers were witness to what they called a UFO. They looked at it on radar. All of them were looking at it with binoculars. What they described was an object that was as bright as a road flare, a red road flare, and it was pulsing like a heartbeat. And the incredible thing about it, that particular report, aside from the reliability of the people who were calling it into us, was the fact that when the light subsided, they could see an object inside the cloud of light.
Wow.
And it was changing shape on every cycle. Sometimes it looked like a disc, sometimes it looked like a triangle, they reported. Sometimes it looked like a spider web. I believe it to be the case, Michael, that we are dealing with a technology, let's call it, that is so far beyond ours. Their ability to manipulate matter, information, and energy is so far advanced beyond what we know here on the planet Earth that when they do it, it looks like magic to us.
Now, let me ask you, Peter, you say that you think that it's something that's not terrestrial then.
That is my belief.
Okay. Do you allow for at all the possibility that we might be experiencing or seeing some highly advanced technology behind the so-called black budget curtain? Do you think that there's a possibility that that could
be
what it is?
There's a possibility that some of these reports that we take are a result of people witnessing terrestrial technology, advanced stuff.
Okay.
In fact, on the 13th of June this year, we took a fax report from a Canadian airline up in Richmond, British Columbia. One of their DC-10 pilots and whole crew was witness. They were flying from Hong Kong to Vancouver, British Columbia. This is on the 9th of June. It was just dawn. They were about 2 hours flying flight time west of Vancouver, out over the Pacific, and they had an object go by them that I talked to the captain about it. He said, Peter, it was almost a religious experience how fast that object was going. They were at 37,000 feet eastbound. This object was above them. It looked like a big ball of yellow light. And it was streaking by them. It was gone ahead of them over the horizon in under a minute.
Wow.
Now, from 37,000 feet, the horizon is probably a couple hundred miles ahead of you.
Yeah.
So an object that could do 200 miles in 1 minute.
Okay. Hold that thought. We're going to break again. 1-800-836-2009. 1-800-UFO-2009. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm Michael Corbin, and you're listening to the Paranet Continuum. Grab a pen and get ready to copy down a computer address. It's an email address where you can reach the Paranet Information Services BBS through America Online. With America Online's Internet Gateway, you can send us mail and we can respond to you personally through your America Online screen name.
with America Online's Usenet News Group tie-in, you can also access the 7 Paranet news groups dealing with UFOs, metaphysics, paranormal activity, and others. Learn about our upcoming shows and pose questions in advance. And if your question is selected, you'll get a free cassette copy of the show. You'll also find summaries of past shows. If you're not already a customer of America Online, call 1-800-827-6364 for more information. Now, here's that email address to reach us. It's paranet@aol.com or paranet@paranet.org. America Online and Paranet, a winning combination.
Paranet and MICAP, the Multinational Investigations Cooperative on Aerial Phenomena, gives you a chance to hear and read more about UFOs and the paranormal. Catch up on our previous Paranet radio shows with cassette tapes you can order for $8 each or 2 tapes for $6 each, 3 or more at $5 each. Become a member of Paranet and subscribe to Continuum, Paranet's quarterly magazine. And don't forget our stunning black t-shirt with a background of galaxies, stars, and comets, the Paranet and MICAP logos, and a beautiful blue-green planet Earth. When you order from Paranet, you're helping to support this program. Call now for more information or to order your tapes, Continuum subscriptions, or t-shirts at 1-800-UFO-NET-1. That's 1-800-836-6381. Paranet, your window on the universe at 1-800-UFO-NET-1.
Touch with the latest news on the paranormal and the growing UFO phenomena by fax, computer network, and this program, the Paranet Continuum. Here's your host, Michael Corbin.
And welcome back, my guest, Peter Davenport, who is the director of the National UFO Reporting Center. He's been fascinating us with interesting sighting reports that he has taken. And ladies and gentlemen, I want to say, you know, I'm very excited about having Peter on the program because for me, you know, a nuts and bolts guy that I am, you know, this is what UFO investigation and research is all about. You know, granted, a lot of these sightings that Peter gets, and he said this, a lot of these sightings can be explained prosaically, misperception of a twinkling star that's low on the horizon, what have you. But there are still that percentage of sighting reports that come in that defy explanation, and this is the basis for what UFO investigation and research is all about. And by the way, I want to thank you, Keith, out there at Hooper, Utah, listening to KCNR, our affiliate in Salt Lake. You're the winner of the T-shirt, the last giveaway. We've got another one coming up soon, so stay tuned. 1-800-836-2009, 1-800-UFO-2009. If you have a sighting report you'd like to talk to Peter about, give us a call. That's a toll-free number. Peter, on the these sighting things that are the reports that are coming into you, are you seeing any general trends as to what's being sighted?
I think we are, and I'm glad you asked the question, Michael, because the question we handle most frequently is, are sightings on the increase or on the wane? And that's a question that is very difficult for us to answer based on the volume of calls, because the volume of calls can be a result of many things, public appearances, programs like this, and so on. But one thing we've noticed in the last couple of months, perhaps even more recently than that, is the sightings are becoming more breathtaking. Whereas many of them in the past were just lights in the sky in the distance, moving very fast oftentimes, people just getting fleeting glimpses of these lights or even ships. Now they're becoming much more brazen, it would seem. On the 9th of July, for example, we had 5 ships reportedly hovering over an empty field in central Missouri, just north of Lake of the Ozarks, near the town or the city of Versailles, Missouri, what you and I would call Versailles. They do things a little bit differently out
sure.
of Missouri. I know because I was born there. But there were 5 ships, and reportedly, there were up to 50 creatures underneath these ships on an empty field, scurrying around doing God only knows what all, picking up twigs or something. The observers weren't sure what they were doing. Now, can we believe the report? That's the question. In point of fact, it's under active investigation. We know we have received a modicum of corroboration from the Missouri Highway Patrol, with whom we've worked very, very closely on a couple of cases that
mm-hmm.
they've been involved in recently.
Right.
And also, we know that the Air Force, U.S. Air Force, from whom we first received this report, is very interested in what we find out.
Yep.
They have tried to call the observers on a number of occasions. I've talked to them. They've also called the investigators to find out what they know.
Now, I got a little bit distracted here. Who was doing the calling? The Air Force?
The U.S. Air Force at Whiteman Air Force Base, which is just east of Kansas City, Missouri. Kansas City,
sure.
Missouri, and Kansas,
uh-huh.
has made at least 9 calls with regard to this investigation.
Is that unprecedented, Peter?
I mean, unusual.
It is unusual. I would have to admit it is, because wouldn't that kind of give the impression that maybe their curiosity has piqued?
I don't know if these are calls in an official capacity
mm-hmm.
or whether we might be dealing with certain parties there who are interested for their own purposes
mm-hmm.
as to what is found. But there have been calls made.
Okay, now.
And I don't know the nature of them. We're not personally involved in the investigation, but we're anticipating a report here soon.
Okay. That brings me to my next question. I wanted to ask you about this. You know, in the position that you're in, what is the government doing about these sightings? Do you have any knowledge of that?
I have no knowledge whatsoever.
Okay.
And that leads me to a rhetorical question I usually present or propose or pose during programs like this, and that is the following. If the UFO Reporting Center in Seattle can accumulate the body of data that we have accumulated with just one phone line, one tape recorder, and a small handful of very dedicated volunteers, what does the government know about this? It seems inconceivable to me that the U.S. government is not fully aware that we have guests on this planet, no doubt from other parts of our galaxy. And recently, if I can say one more word on that,
okay.
Michael, I have come up with a means for detecting UFOs in the Earth's atmosphere. And I think it's going to put the final nail in the coffin of the U.S. government's position on UFOs, because in the very near future, I anticipate that we will be able to detect the presence of UFOs and perhaps track them and reconstruct their trajectory through the Earth's atmosphere by using a type of communication. I'll bet many of our listeners tonight know about this technology. It's called meteor scatter communication. And to make a long story short, what you can do is bounce a radio signal off of the ionized tail behind a meteorite.
Right. Mm-hmm.
When a meteorite screeches into the atmosphere, it leaves a long path of glowing particles.
Which is ionized atmosphere.
Ionized atmosphere and burned material. And for a fraction of a second, you can bounce a radio signal off of that. For the same reason we cannot communicate with astronauts when they re-enter the atmosphere, for example.
Uh-huh.
They're surrounded in a globe of ionized particles and radio signals go through it.
Right.
Well, we have hundreds of reports in which people claim that when a UFO goes screeching over their head, it leaves a path of glowing material. In late January, I reasoned that trail, even though the UFO itself may be able to conceal itself from radar, it wouldn't be able to conceal its ionized tail stretching hundreds of yards or perhaps miles behind it. In point of fact, it seems that my theory is correct, and we are going to be able to build meteor scatter receiver systems that will detect the passage of UFOs at high speed through our atmosphere. Once we have that and we start collecting data and we are able to show incontrovertibly that there are objects in our atmosphere that are not meteorites, not aircraft, and so on, I think the government's apparent position, they're of course mum, they don't say very much. You wouldn't even know whom to ask in the government with regard to this issue. But I think it's going to destroy whatever position the government may have with regard to denying that UFOs exist.
Do you think, though, Peter, that they might have a legitimate reason to not acknowledge officially the existence of UFOs? Do you?
Sure.
Okay.
There may very well be a very good reason that the government doesn't want to reveal this. However, my argument would be that the government is answerable to us. And no matter how bad the facts they have may be, I would argue that the government owes the American people an explanation. We're tired, I am tired, of being lied to by bureaucrats.
Okay.
And I think most Americans feel the same way.
Okay, hold that thought. We'll be back after that. We'll pick up, get information as to how to get a hold of you. And got one last question for you. I want to find out what your take on all this is. Stay tuned. My guest is Peter Davenport, Director of the National UFO Reporting Center. I'll be right back. I'm Michael Corbin, and this is Paranet Continuum. Alien Grays makes t-shirts and sweatshirts for the UFO enthusiast, and they're some of the best artwork you've ever seen on a t-shirt. Alien Grays has over 15 designs, including the well-known gray alien head with almond-shaped black eyes, X-Files and Star Trek shirts, Fire in the Sky, and other dazzling alien life forms and space art. Now, all t-shirts are blazing full-color laser-printed onto 100% pre-shrunk white cotton tees. People will notice these shirts when you wear them. To order a catalog or a shirt during the week, call this toll-free number, 1-800-561-7775. That's 1-800-561-7775. Now, as we've done before, I'm going to give away a free t-shirt from Alien Grays to the fifth caller right now who calls 1-800-UFO-2009, 1-800-836-2009. And for those of you listening to this program late at night or early in the morning on tape delay, send us a postcard with your name and address, and we'll draw one postcard per week. Now, you write to the Paranet T-shirt giveaway at Post Office Box 172, Wheat Ridge, Colorado, 80034.
Pilots depend on accurate, timely information, both in the cockpit and on the ground. Skyway Publications helps with both. The Skyway Airport Directory and Entertainment Guide provides convenient, accurate information for safe flight and landing operations, as well as local businesses that cater to pilots. These are free, pocket-sized guides with information on large and small airports nationwide, along with technical information, fuel and airport services, and businesses that can make life easier for pilots. Keep in mind, it's free. Check your local airport for the Skyway Publications Airport Directory and Entertainment Guide, or call area 970-669-1800. Call Skyway today and find out how the guide can also be a financial opportunity for you. Skyway Publications, your ticket to safer, cheaper, and more convenient flight. Check your local airport or call Skyway at 970-669-1800.
This is the Paranet Continuum, a weekly program dedicated to the mysterious and fascinating world of UFOs and the paranormal. If you're interested in learning more about Paranet, the world's foremost communications network on the paranormal, call us at 303-863-0484 or write to Box 172, Wheat Ridge, Colorado, 80034. Once again, here's your host, Michael Corbin.
And welcome back, my guest, Peter Davenport, director of the National UFO Reporting Center. Peter, I want to thank you for a very fascinating and interesting hour. I've really enjoyed having you. I'm going to have you back to talk about this more. Unfortunately, an hour just doesn't... barely doesn't scratch the surface.
Well, thank you, Michael. It's been delightful, and I am really grateful for the opportunity to say a few words on this very, very important subject of UFOs on this planet.
Yeah, well, you keep up the good work, and I hope to, again, have you back soon. Good. Peter, tell us how to write you or call you. I'm sure there's a lot of people that are going to be interested in following up this program.
Let me give you our telephone number. I'll give you then our mailing address, and then I'll share our internet address. Anybody who sees a UFO, who has a recent sighting within the last day or two, perhaps three or four even, call area code 206-722-3000. That's 722-3000 in Seattle, and you'll get the UFO hotline. Our mailing address is P.O. Box 45623, Seattle, Washington, and the zip code here is 98145. That's P.O. Box 45623, zip code in Seattle is 98145. Now, we have an email address for incoming email. It is ufocntr@northwestlink.com. And we periodically put our cryptic reports summarizing the calls we've taken on the following address. It's a news group address. It's called alt.paranet.ufo.
Excellent. Okay.
And periodically people will be able to access our reports that go out over the Internet. In the very near future, we'll have a website, I anticipate, within the next 2 weeks or so. And people will be able to get quite a bit of information. Also, if they would like a general information packet, they can send us a check for $10 to cover our expenses, a self-addressed stamped envelope enough for 5 ounces of material, and we will put our sighting report summary, a general information packet, and we'll get it back out to you. But we have to have a self-addressed stamped envelope.
Okay.
And a check for $10. If people would like to subscribe to our newsletter, it's $50 a year for 12 monthly issues. And what we do in that newsletter is discuss some of the more interesting cases during the calendar month.
Okay, Peter, that's good. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mike.
Okay, one last thing I want to mention is apparently we're going to be on the Microsoft Network, and I'll give you some more information about that on the next program. We're moving the network over to Microsoft Network, and it's going to be an exciting venture, so we'll update you on that next week. And also, the Denver area, we're going to be heard live on KHOW number 2. We'll have some more information on that next week also. Until then, I'm Michael Corbin telling you to keep your eyes on the skies. Good night.